Anyway, Living Out Our Destiny is the title. My grandma on my mother's side was a very godly woman, and she served God. I don't know when she got saved, but she was young. And I was visiting with her one time when I was home from college. So this is in the 70s at the time. I suppose she was in her 70s, something like that. And it was really interesting. We were just having a great talk because I was at Bible school, so it just got her in the mood about thinking about ministry and all that. And so this is this godly woman in her 70s, served God her whole life, has seen a few things, grew up in the Pentecostal Holiness Church, very dramatic, very big deal. She was 15 years old when she got married in 1930 in southeast Colorado, and her husband was a farmer. So the year she got married, the Dust Bowl started. For the next 10 years, the first 10 years of her marriage, they were farming in the Dust Bowl. So that just tells you this is a pioneer woman, right? And she loved God and trusted God. So I'm trying to set the stage for what kind of a woman this is. And she said to me in her 70s, I have one regret. I wish I had gone overseas and been a missionary. I felt God's calling to be a missionary when I was a kid. And I'm like, are you kidding me? 70 years old, and you have this regret in your life, like, I missed it. That's what she thought, I missed it. And I thought, man, we do not want to get there, right? That is not what we want our testimony to be. We don't want to get any age and say, I missed it. We want to say, I found God's destiny, and I lived it. And so that's what I'm after today, is just to stir up in us this idea of finding out what is God's destiny for me and to live it, not to miss it for whatever reason. And so I am going to tell a few stories because I want to use some biblical examples. I want to start in the Old Testament. I want to tell a story in the New Testament, and that'll set us up. So, you know, we know about Jacob, right? One of the Old Testament patriarchs, and I want to tell you just some sort of the highlights about this guy. So we have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the lineage to get you the feel of who's who. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And when Isaac's wife, Rebekah, was pregnant, she was a little bit older, and it was a gift of God that she got pregnant, she could, something was happening in her pregnancy. Like, and what it was twins. And the scripture literally says they were jostling around, and she didn't know what was going on, so she inquired of the Lord. So she went to have a talk with God, like, what is going on with me? And the Lord gave her a word that you have two kids, they're going to be leaders of nations, and the young, older is going to serve the younger. So God spoke to this mama. And so they're born, the older one comes out, and he is, it's really funny, Esau is red and hairy. And he comes out, and Jacob is holding on to his foot, holding on to his heel. So they named him Jacob, which means grasping the heel, but it's an idiom. It's a piece of language that means a deceiver. So they name this kid the deceiver. So how would you guys like to get the name Big Fat Liar? I mean, that's basically what they called him, right? That's his name. They say, let me lay this on you, boy. You're the deceiver. And so that's this kid's name, and so he sort of starts living up to his name a little bit. And so he's going through life. There is this one event as they're a little bit older, him and his brother. His brother's a hunter. It sounds like Jacob's kind of a homebody. Maybe he's the guy that sits around and reads books or something. But one day his brother comes home from hunting, and he's really hungry. And Jacob is sitting home cooking some beans. And he's so hungry. His brother is so hungry that he says, I would really like to have those beans, please. And Jacob, he's the deceiver, right? So he takes advantage of this, says, well, I'll give them to you, sure, for your birthright. And he says, okay, it's worth it. I mean, what good is a birthright if I die from starvation? So he takes the beans, gives up his birthright. And so this is kind of this cautionary tale. I've often heard this in my life about, you know, the instant, the lust that takes us over and we give up something important in order to get a bowl of beans, right? But what I'd like to think about is the other side of the story a little bit. Here's this guy, his brother comes in. It's his brother. I'm like, dude, it's your brother. Give him some beans. What's wrong with you? But instead, he sees a chance to get it over on him, right? So he deceives him. So that was a big, major deal. Scripture makes a point of telling us the story. So a little bit later in life, when the dad is getting ready to pass away, and he is wanting to give his blessing to the kids. So mom's a little bit tricky too, and mom hears that dad wants his oldest son to go out and to the woods and kill his favorite game and come back. So mom tells Jacob, you know what, while he's out there hunting, what we need to do, while Esau's out hunting, what we need to do is get a couple of goats, and I'll make up this really good curry that he loves, and we'll trick dad. And Jacob knows that he's way different. He doesn't have that hairy body, you know. He says, well, dad will, he's blind, but he's not stupid. You know, he'll feel on me. He'll know that I'm not the right guy. So this is mom. She says, well, I know what we'll do. We'll take this dead goat. We'll tie some of its skin on your hands and on the back of your neck. And then when you go in, and we'll put on your brother's clothes, because I'm sure they smell like musk. And when you go in, you'll smell like your brother. And when he feels your hands in the back of your head to lay his hand on you, he'll feel like your brother, right? So he follows through. He's tricking. He's just this deceiver guy. So he tricks his dad. Not only tricked his brother out of the birthright, now he's tricking his dad out of the blessing. And so he does that. He tricks his dad out of this blessing. So it's just one big fat lie. Matter of fact, in the conversation, dad even asked him, like, dad's going, wait, something's not quite right. So he says, are you Esau? And he says directly, yes. I mean, just directly lying. He's not like sort of fudging. He's just directly lying. But for some reason, I don't get all this, but for some reason there's no takebacks on this blessing that he gave. And so when Esau finally gets in with the game, dad says, oh, no, that, you know, your brother, big fat liar that we called him, he took the birthright. And so the gig was up, but there's no takebacks, apparently. So the blessing stayed with Jacob. So it's big mess, right? So this is that guy. This is that guy. He's going through life. He gets named a deceiver. He's living out in deception. He's practicing that lifestyle. Well, now we're getting to the place where the kids are older. It's time to get married. Dad wants him to get a kid from somewhere else. And so he doesn't want to get married to the local, I forget, Canaanites, I think. And he says, I want you to travel to your cousins and find another bride. And so he's traveling, this is the big fat liar, is traveling to find a bride. And here's the deal, God encounters him. And this is where we're going to start in Genesis 28, to actually open the scripture, New International Version, Genesis 28. And verse 10 through 22. So this place where he's setting out for Haran is where his family is, where he's hoping to find a bride. So I'm going to go ahead and read those 12 verses. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will be spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. And the stone that I've set up as a pillar will be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So he decides he's going to tithe. And so this is the thing I'm getting out of this that's really dramatic. This is when Jacob encounters God. So this is this big fat liar, right? And even the blessing that the father gave him, really when you read it, it's nothing to shout about. It's like your brother's going to bow down to you. The other countries are going to, you know, they're going to bow down to you a little bit, whatever. And then God comes and gives this big, huge thing, gigantic thing. And this is where he encounters God. And I think this is where his destiny was set in place. And it changed how he lived. And the reason I know that is when you read the very next section, he finally shows up where he's going to get his wife. And I don't want to tell the whole story, but basically he goes and makes a deal for his wife. He says, I will work 7 years because he fell in love with this girl. You know, he said, man, this is amazing. I want to marry her. And he works 7 years for her. And talk about turning the tables. His future father-in-law tricked the trickster. So he wakes up after his wedding night and he looks over and it's not his wife that he thought, it's her older sister. Like, what the heck? I mean, you shouldn't. This is also a tale about not drinking at your wedding reception, right? Something. I mean, I don't know what the heck. But so the dad comes in and says, oh, I forgot to tell you, we have this custom that, you know, if there's an older unmarried sister, we got to get her married off first, right? So then what does he do? He doesn't go into his trickster mode. He doesn't go into his lying. He doesn't go in, I'm going to get one over on you. You know what he does? He puts his head down and works 7 more years. This is the new guy. And God has set his destiny in place. And when he encountered God, it changed him. And now he's moving forward through life. He ends up being the father of Joseph, who also had his own problems with vision and whatnot. But, you know, ultimately, this is the line leading up to Jesus, and this destiny that God set in place became true through him. So the main things I want us to see is his destiny was set when he encountered God, and he was willing to move forward into that, and that was what changed him. So now I'm going to look at Peter a little bit, another famous guy, fun guy to talk about, look at. Peter the disciple, right? What do we think of when we think about Peter? We think of kind of impetuous, kind of just like maybe we would label him ADHD today, right? He just does something. He thinks about it and he just does it. Maybe he doesn't even think about it. He just does it, then he thinks about it. And he's just this wild, crazy guy. That's how we think about Peter. And even in the scripture when he was called, him and his brother Andrew were casting nets, and Jesus said, follow me. And it says immediately they left their nets and followed him. And I'm thinking it implies that they're casting out their nets. Jesus says, follow me, and they immediately leave. I'm thinking they just left their nets laying out in the ocean and walked away. I mean, this guy is just impetuous, just kind of a little bit crazy. And there's another scene later in the life of the apostles with Jesus where they're out in a storm, and it's after Jesus had fed the 5,000, and it's a terrible storm. The disciples are in the boat, but Jesus is not. He had been back behind to pray on a mountain. And in the middle of the storm, and they're worried about something happening, they see a figure walking on the water. They think it's a ghost. And so Peter, of everybody, right, Peter says, and we know this story, Peter says, well, if it's really you, ask me to walk on the water. So he just gets out and walks on the water, right, for a minute. Then he looks at the storm, then he drops down. But Jesus saves him, which is important. Jesus saves him. So what I'm setting up is this character of Peter. Just this impetuous, strong-willed, just kind of crazy guy. And so another one I like, another story I'll tell you, is after saving on the water and all that, it's called the Transfiguration. And Jesus was praying, and he had Peter and John with him praying. And all of a sudden, there's like this huge light, and Peter looks up, and there's three figures. It's not just Jesus. There's two guys with them. And the scripture says his face is like lightning. So this is bright, flashing, everything's going on, big deal. So what does Peter, the impetuous, just says without thinking guy? Well, let's build these guys some huts. Let's do something, right? And so in the scripture says Peter did not know what he was saying. So it's a very kind way of saying, oh, you dummy. What are you talking about? Build some huts for Jesus, you know, and Elijah and Ezekiel, you know, right? And then while he was speaking, this the scripture says, while Peter was speaking, a cloud enveloped him. And this is God saying, enough, right? And so this is Peter. This is this crazy, I'll do anything. I'll follow you up, blah, blah, blah. Well, we know the scripture where Jesus says, actually, you're going to betray me. And Peter says, no way. No way. Not me, man. I'm the guy. I'm the guy that will walk out on the water for you. I'm not going to betray you. So now let's look in Luke 22. And this is a seriously poignant story. When I think about the setting and the background of who Peter is, and like he's the guy that will do everything, will lead, will walk on water, will want to build a house for you. And then this is Luke 22, verses 54 through 62. So Jesus has just been arrested. In fact, Peter had just cut off one of the guy's ears that was trying to arrest him. Jesus had to heal him. And now they're in this courtyard. And apparently they're in this courtyard. There's a fire. And in the background, somehow you can still see the trial. You can tell from the context that you can actually see what's happening sitting around this fire. So Peter is observing Jesus being questioned. And they beat him, they question him all night long. They go in the evening, the next scene when they finally release him is morning. So they are doing this all night long. So then seizing him, talking about Jesus, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance, but when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, "This man was with him." But he denied it. "Woman, I don't know him," he said. A little later, someone else saw him and said, "You also are one of them." "Man, I am not," Peter replied. About an hour later, another asserted, "Certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean." Peter replied, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Man, think about that. The Lord turned in the middle of all this stuff and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. "Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times." And he went outside and wept bitterly. What do you think Peter was thinking about his destiny in that moment? Right? What was he thinking? You know, totally, it's totally screwed up, right? You might even reflect that Judas had the same experience. Judas had just, you know, betrayed Jesus himself and denied him in front of other people. Judas also felt bad, but he went out and killed himself. That was his response. So here's what I think is even more dramatic, is Peter already had been spoken over by Jesus a destiny. He had already been given a word by Jesus. And this is back in Matthew 16. So the history of it, this is within days. We're not talking years. We're talking days, possibly weeks. Jesus gave Peter this talk, and this is in Matthew 16, verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say that I am?" "Simon Peter," answered, right? He asked everybody, Simon Peter answers, You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now listen to what Jesus sets forward for Peter. Jesus replied, Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he warned his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. See, Jesus gave Peter his destiny just within days. Peter's saying, No, I'm not that. I don't know him. And then Jesus looks at him. And then I imagine that Peter thought, well, I'm done. Right, that's it. I'm done. I mean, the whole thing's falling apart. And he actually went back to fishing. I mean, he really wasn't able to see himself through Christ's eyes. And, of course, we know the story. Jesus was resurrected. He starts appearing to people. The word's starting to get out. You know, he appears to these ladies first. He starts appearing to different folks. Peter had gone to the tomb to see what was there. And then Jesus is starting to show up. So the word's getting out, the word's getting out. And so finally Jesus encounters Peter. And this is with the other disciples are on the beach. And maybe you remember Peter jumped out of the boat and swam to Jesus. Couldn't wait to row into shore. And Jesus has a little talk with him. And I believe this is the instant where Jesus gets him back on track to his destiny. He says, I'm going to build my church on this rock, right? I'm going to encounter people through the church. And this is what you're involved in. And so Jesus reinstates or gets him back on track to his destiny. And this is, you know, the story out of John 21 where Jesus starts eating this fish, feeding this fish to him. He says, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. So he's like telling Peter this. So I feel like that's the moment where he gets him back on track. So the thing I'm thinking about is you encounter God, you get this destiny, you can get off, but then you can encounter God again, and he can get you back on track. And then we know the stories about Jesus, I mean about Peter in the New Testament. He's the first guy that stood up to preach, recorded sermon. 5,000 people got saved. He's the first recorded guy to do a miracle. Pulls this guy to his feet. Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, right? He's the first guy recorded that reached out beyond the Jewish community to the non-Jews. That was Peter. I mean, this is the guy that became the father of the church, one of the great fathers of the church. So he was able to fulfill his destiny. I love this scripture out of 1 Peter 2. And for me, it's very significant when you think about his history. Don't just read the scripture like, oh, this is nice. But you think about, this is that guy that went through all those things, denied Christ directly, officially, was reinstated, went through all this stuff in building the early church. So 1 Peter 2:9, and this is in the message. But you are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people. You hear all this? You're chosen. You're picked. Peter's saying that out of some experience. He knows what he's talking about. God put his hand on you and picked you. And he chose you for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be a holy people, God's instruments to do his work and speak out for him, to tell others of the night and day difference he made for you. From nothing to something, from rejected to accepted. Isn't that powerful when you think of the guy that's delivering those words? So what do we think about our destiny? This is for us now, right? This is that thing about if we're listening, God has something for us. What do we think about our destiny? Because I can tell you in our life, the dumbest things can set us off track. I've told this story at Cleansing Stream conferences, but I'm going to kind of move quick here. When I was a kid, we moved to Southeast Colorado, not too far from Lahana, down in Springfield. And I was in third grade, and so I'd had my whole life in one place, very stable, very secure with my friends, you know, all that, and we moved to a new town. So I never had that experience before. I never knew what it was like to walk into a classroom where no one knew you. That was the first time I've ever experienced anything like that. Actually, I've never been in a place where no one knew me, I think. I grew up in a town of 100 people. And so we moved to this new town. It's not very big, but to me it was big. It was 10 times larger than where I grew up, right? And so the first day of school was right around Easter time when we moved. So we had Easter candy. So for whatever reason, I had brought some candy to school. And so this is a visual here. I put a chocolate candy bar in my back pocket. Wow, you guys are fast. So, and I sat on it. And then I was called up to the front. Hey, we got a new kid here. Come on up. So I walked up to the front, and, you know, y'all are smart. I'm just going to let you figure it out. And I just felt so rejected, right? In that moment, I felt rejected. I felt embarrassed. It was the kind of thing I had to pray about at cleansing streams, right? It was a big deal. And whatever confidence I had that would help me move towards my destiny, that stuff was like broke. And I was the most insecure, quiet kid. I was so quiet and shy. You would never get me up front to talk in front of anybody, right? Because if I go up front, I'm going to have a bad experience. That's what I learned. See how my destiny was set aside? And so what I found out is that I had to encounter God. And we were so fortunate that we grew up in the church. We went to, you know, we had camps, we had retreats, we had these cool experiences. And I had this dramatic experience between 8th grade and 9th grade. It was a summer between. And, you know, if you're a shy guy and you're insecure and all that, you are dreading going into high school. The stories precede you, you know. For you kids that are younger thinking about that, don't worry, it's not like they say. But we were nervous. I was nervous about the older kids, what they were going to do to me. I was so worried. Nervous isn't strong enough, right? So we're at this retreat right before school started. I think it was Labor Day weekend. And God encountered me. I mean, just dropped a bomb on me. And believe it or not, he used a scripture that if you're going to serve me and you put your hand to the plow, you don't look back. That was the scripture he spoke to me. And something about that, and he spoke many scriptures, but it was about being a disciple. That was the theme of the retreat. And it grabbed me, and I said, that's who I am. I'm his disciple. I'm the guy that means something because I'm his. I'm his. And that just spoke to me. It was a life-changing event. And I began, and nothing happens instantaneously, but I began to see myself in a new light. And then became the kind of guy that talks maybe too much and is not afraid to be in front of people. I mean, that was the start of what I feel like was God's destiny. But it was a literal encounter with him. And I had this event as I walked out in the mornings. I would go out for prayer in the mornings, 8th grade kid, and up in this Oak Creek, Colorado, down by Steamboat Springs, up into this sagebrush, and I got up there, and I'd get out my Bible, and I'd read the scripture, and God encountered me personally. Like, I remember reading this verse about being a disciple, and about putting your hand to the plow, and just weeping, sitting up in the woods, you know, in the sagebrush, weeping, this little kid. And God encountered me, and that was the beginning of this change, and how I learned how important it was for let God set our destiny for us. So there's a few things I learned about this, and I think this encourages us, so I just want to tell you a couple things. Change is steady and incremental. So we know when we screw up, we're like Peter, man. Jesus looks at us, we know when we screwed up. No one has to tell us when we screwed up, right? We can't hardly get that out of our head. But we need to be encouraged that God has a destiny for us, and he does want us to follow it, but it's not like night and day for the most part. It's steady. Change is steady and incremental. It takes time. We have to be patient with God. And then he works with us. He gets these promises from us when we're feeling good, right? And then when times aren't so good, he starts calling out the markers. He starts calling on what we promised him. Little by little, he starts this process of working on us. Another thing that's very big for me is our failures don't define us. So when we do screw up, that's not the new me because I screwed up. We're still the person that God destined us to be. We're still destined. I just, you know, as I glance at Casey, she's still destined to change the world, right, in the courts or through the halls of justice. You know, our destiny is still there. So if we do make a mistake, that doesn't define us. It's what God has already placed on us. That's what we're defined by. I often think of the prodigal son, that the guy goes out, riotous living, he wants to come back to God, or, you know, his father. And his father says, "You're my son." He says, "I just want to be your servant." Like, he redefines himself, but the father never did. The father says, "No, you're my son. You're still my son. Doesn't matter what you did, you're still my son." So he does not redefine it. The kid redefines it for himself, but the dad never does. And that's how God is with us. The destiny he placed on us, he doesn't change his mind. There's a great theological term, God is immutable. It means he doesn't change his mind, right? God is the same. He's the guy that's always the same. And so when he sets his destiny on us, it's there for us. I'm thinking how much I'm going to rattle. I'm going to tell you one last thing here. So this probably feels a little out of left field, but let's just, that last section, do not steal. And I want to show you how this ties into this. So we know the Ten Commandments, right? So when I say thou shalt not steal, we all recognize that as one of the Ten Commandments. It's the eighth commandment out of Exodus 20. And the really interesting part for me is that this is a Jewish word called ganav. Thou shalt not steal. The Ten Commandments are actually 10 words. Hebrew guys actually call them the 10 words. They don't say 10 Commandments. And the eighth word is ganav. Thou shalt not steal. You cannot steal. It's an interesting Hebrew phrase, and I heard a Hebrew scholar say this. I'm not one of those guys. But there's three things about thou shalt not steal. First one is you shouldn't steal property, right? And that's what we think it means. Don't steal property. That's like when I was in fifth grade and I went to Trader's Market and I stole cigarettes. That was me breaking the eighth commandment. And I never smoked, but I did steal cigarettes, which is probably another story. So stealing property. A second thing is you can't steal people. And we call that kidnapping, right? So thou shalt not steal property, thou shalt not steal people. The third meaning in the Hebrew is do not steal from someone's heart. And that's a little more subtle. And so an example I think about is if there's three of us in a room and two guys have this inside joke. Has anybody experienced that where you're the third guy that doesn't get the inside joke, right? And they're telling something, they're kind of laughing, and wasn't that, you know, whatever, and they say this line and the other guy laughs, and you're the one that's left out. That's a very subtle thing, but they're stealing from your heart. They're stealing from your heart because you're not part of what's going on. You're out of the loop. If I give my affection to someone else that belongs to my wife, I'm stealing from her heart. Thou shalt not steal. One of the main core values for us is encountering God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. When I don't love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, I'm stealing from his heart. And the second part of that is also a core value for us, and love your neighbor as yourself. If I don't love my neighbor correctly, I'm stealing from his heart. As yourself. If I don't love myself, if I don't love myself the way God called me to love myself, if I'm not living the destiny that God's placed on me, I'm stealing from my heart and from God's heart. If it's not just that life's not as good, it's not just that I'm not as fulfilled, if I'm not living the destiny that God gave me, I'm stealing from him, and I'm stealing from myself. Because the only way we really do feel what VJ spoke today is if we're in God's destiny. That's the way God created us. We were created to serve him. We were created to connect with him. We were created to do what he made us to do, right? Called us to do and made us to be. That's what we were created to do. And when we miss that, we're stealing. And we're so unhappy. God knows. He knows what we need, right? And so this is what I'm really after today is when we see ourselves as less than God sees us, when we think our destiny is less than God does, then we're stealing from our own heart. When we think, when God called us to lead a nation, but we see ourselves as a trickster, right? When God called us to be the rock that the church is built upon, and we see ourselves as a deceiver and a betrayer, we're stealing from God. And so I just want to say that God has called us to be leaders in the culture. We've been hearing from Justin about how do you treat and how do you love people in an unrighteous culture. That's God's destiny for us, is to love people. And if we're not meeting God's destiny, then we're stealing from Him and we're stealing from ourselves. So this is a big deal, right? And sometimes you think, man, I'm never going to change. I'm not going to get better, right? I'm never going to gain. So I was really encouraged. I'm going to tell you one thing, then we're going to quit. When I told this story in church 2 years ago in Mexico, I'm leading the team and I have maps, right? Maps are a big deal for me. And I have maps, so how could we possibly get lost? What could possibly go wrong? Because I have maps. So we get so lost. And I'm just feeling so crummy about this, but it's not that I feel bad for the people or whatever. I'm feeling bad because my pride is getting injured. Because who I think I am as a person is affronted, right? I lost us. And we fell on this neat thing where we would hire a taxi cab. We'd stick Hector in the taxi cab. And Hector would say, go to this hotel. And then we'd say, don't lose that taxi. And we'd follow the taxi. We had to do it twice, actually, in Saltillo. So there was a good, you know, a confrontation that God gave me. And I told the church about that, you know, how God was using that to speak to me about who I am, how I feel about myself, all that. Well, this year we went to Mexico again, and I didn't tell you this story yet. So we went downtown shopping one day. And I drop everybody off because it's hard to find parking at this big square. And it's a pretty busy city. And I said, well, I'll just go park first place I find and I'll come back and then, you know, they'll be great. So I drive and I don't find a spot. So I go right and I don't find a spot. And I go left, I don't find a spot. And I finally find a spot. And so I stop and I say, no problem because I'm right under this sign, the Hotel Rodrigo. How could we possibly get lost, right? So then I walk back, I find the shopping center, it's great. In my defense, the shopping center has four entrances, so you know, I don't know north, south, east, west, but we go in one, we walk out one, we go in one. Yeah, I don't know where we're at, right? So it's finally time to leave, and there's another guy's with us, and I say, well, it's just a few blocks over, Hotel Rodrigo, can't miss it. So we'll meet you over there. So I start walking, my wife and I and our, I forget what we had with us, six or seven young people, right? So we start walking. Okay, it's just a little ways. And you know that feeling when you start walking and you don't think things are quite familiar, but you're pretty, maybe, maybe not. And so we start walking. It's hot, really hot. And we're just walking, turning left, turning right. And I'm going, I can't find the car. I don't know where the car is. So after a while, we stop, and I say, you guys wait here, I'll go find it. I'm sure it's close. So I start walking, I can't find it. I said, I know what to do, I'll get a taxi cab, right? So there's a taxi cab, I go up, I go, take me to the Hotel Rodrigo. He said, there's no Hotel Rodrigo. I'm like, oh man, I'm in trouble. So I'm looking, but here's the thing, as I'm telling the story, it's not like it was a year ago. I'm not saying I'm a bad person. You know, I remembered. I was thinking about last year. I said, Lord, I'm not going to screw up here. I'm not going to start thinking of myself differently. I know you're in control. Look, we're just people, whatever, right? People mess up. And so even though it was a drag and it was a little tense, right, I wasn't falling off the cliff. I wasn't looking Jesus in the eye and betraying him or whatever. I wasn't stealing from my destiny. I'm over there doing ministry, man. And so it was really funny. I got back to the group, and one of the other guys had text back, said, we're at your car. Where are you? So I said, well, where are you? So they were able to get us over to the car. We get over there, and there's this big sign, and it's like, I don't remember what Hotel Henrietta or something, but it's not Rodrigo, I can tell you. And so I thought, well, you know, 53 years old, whatever. So we found it, but I was so encouraged that God does help us make progress. We don't have to stay stuck you know, we were young and we had, God put something in our heart, man, you are called to do this. I'm setting this on you. I'm going to use you to change the world. And then we get distracted, or we screw up, or we do whatever, and we get off the path. And I'm saying God can put you back on it, and you can make progress. You can get better. There is hope for that, right? There is hope that we can find our destiny. And when BJ comes out today and says, look, wake up, you adults. Get on board. Lead your children. It's not too late. It's not too late to get on with our destiny. And so that is it. So let's read Romans 12, 1 and 2. And this is in the Message. And this is for everyone. This is for the young people getting ready to go into school this year. You know, God's called us to change our culture. This is for the adults that lead the young people. This is for the adults that are out there on their own. This is for the adults that don't have any kids at home. This is for all of us. We have a calling. We have a destiny. And so Romans 12, 1 and 2. Here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. See, when BJ was talking about your mundane life, take that life that you have that God's given you and lay it before Him as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for Him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Isn't that powerful? Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what He wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you.